Welcome to the Food and Farming podcast from AHDB, keeping levy payers informed and at the heart of the conversation.
Hi, I'm Steve West, Knowledge Exchange Manager for AHDB Dairy, and for today's podcast, we're going to be talking about feed costs. I'm joined by Roy Eastlake, retired nutritional consultant, formerly with Lallemand. Welcome, Roy.
Hi, Steve. Good to speak to you.
Now, we've spoken on many occasions in the past, and I've always enjoyed your enthusiasm for this subject. Now, for the benefit of our listeners, could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, certainly. As you said, I retired in September this year after working 15 years with Lallemand. I've been basically 45 years in the agricultural industry, farmer's son from Cornwall, and worked for many commercial businesses, such as a general manager of an animal feed mill to the general manager of a milk purchasing company, but passionate basically about dairy cows and feeding dairy cows, and still am.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. And I know we've worked together with a number of your clients who we both share. So it's great to have you here today, Roy. Now, it's been a really difficult 12 months, hasn't it? That's the 12 months that follows on from an equally difficult 12 months, the 12 months previous. And we're recording this at the moment in the middle of January. It's 2022. And we've seen lots of announcements from dairy companies about milk price increases, which of course has been welcomed by many. We have a 3.8% reduction in milk deliveries, which has impacted on AHDB forecasts. Now, this reduction isn't restricted to Great Britain only. It's been experienced globally, so we aren't on our own. But equally, whilst we've got healthy looking milk prices, we've seen farm gate cost prices increase, with fuel increasing by 54%, fertiliser increasing by a whopping 238%, and of course, feed increasing by 12.5%. So margins and cash flows are tight. So even with the milk prices responding, things are tough. So Roy, what are you seeing out there? What are your experiences with your clients?
Well, obviously, Steve, I'm seeing similar impacts on margins at the farm level. As you say, feed prices are basically rising dramatically, and that's hurting because the milk prices are rising, but there's a lag behind the milk price rise compared to the feed prices. Cows generally this winter have not milked as well as in previous winters, but milk constituents have been very good. So those farmers on milk constituent contracts probably fared slightly better than the white water contracts. All the farms I've seen are trying to produce higher quality forages and reduce purchase feeds and feed more of these forages. But generally this year, we had poorer quality forages than normal, and this has hit production. But forage quality, you know, those that have had average forage quality have suffered more than the good quality forage farmers. Yet again, TP has impacted on some farms where more animals need to be fed than they were budgeted for. And so this eats away homegrown feed supplies and used up more purchased feeds. I think one of the more serious elements that I've seen this year is the lack of labour on the farms. And this has caused huge pressure on the farmers themselves. On the organic side, the dairy prices seem to have been slower to respond, and here margins are probably a bit tighter than the conventional milk people. And most of my organic farmers next year are looking perhaps at doing different things with perhaps their cereal crops and taking them as combinable cash crops instead.
No, well, I can see, I'm certainly hearing the pressure from particularly organic farmers when it comes to feed costs. And absolutely, one of the first conversations we have when I speak to levy payers is about labour. It is a constant challenge. You've mentioned the last 12 months. If we cast our mind back to last year, last April, we did a series of webinars on silage making. And I know some of the members of my discussion group, they saw it and it was their push that they needed to get that first early cut. It seemed to work for them. For me, there were the haves and the have-nots when it came to silage last year, those who managed to get that early cut in and those that didn't. What are you seeing amongst your clients on that? Nearly a year on, has the quantity been there for the have-nots?
The quantity has, Steve, but not the quality. And this has been the issue. Those farmers that you said got in early on the so-called multi-cut systems basically achieved a number of cuts of high quality silage, but they're few and far between. And generally, most farmers didn't get their act together. They got quantity of fewer cuts, but not the quality. And this has impacted on their margins and their purchase feed costs. For example, a customer of mine in Shropshire who took first cut this year on the 26th of April, interestingly, the previous year was 22nd of April, so very close, he was able to get five cuts that averaged 11.83 ME. This is the average of all five cuts. This has enabled him this winter to improve his production from forage, reduce his purchase fee costs, and he's holding on to his margins. He's not increased his margins, but his margins have stayed the same as the previous year, even with the rising costs. So a successful job.
So I guess that's always a challenge, isn't it, when we talk about contractors? They're not always available, but I guess there is a benefit to even just getting a field or two away early if you can, if you've got the wherewithal to do it.
I agree. And I think basically it's those farmers that plan to do this that achieve it. If you plan to cut early and get it in the contractor's diary, it's all geared up for it. And my phrase in the South, not perhaps the North, in the South, my phrase is April is the new May. And this is when I believe in the South we should be looking to cut first cut grass silages. Farther north, then perhaps, you know, May is the old June. We should be looking to cut early. So taking it about 2 weeks to a month earlier than we normally do, then cutting every 4 to 5 weeks and getting very high quality grass. And I think that will, you know, impact massively on farm margins and production from forage.
I was looking at the AHDB performance results, and they showed that feed costs for all year round calving, high yielding herds accounted for 45 to 49% of cash costs on farm. Now, that was from old figures, that's 2018 to 2019 figures. So surely we've got to consider this to have risen over, like in the last 6 to 12 months, we've seen feed costs rise by 12.5%. So that must have risen in terms of proportion. So in your experience, Roy, what are farmers doing right who achieve the lower end of that range on feed costs?
I'm totally convinced, Steve, that these farmers are the ones that plan early, they cut higher quality forages, they pay much more attention to detail, to things like forage waste, which is huge in this country. And basically, the farmers that haven't done this are less efficient, they have lower energy forages, which the cows will eat less of naturally. They either have suffered a milk decline because they're not willing to use extra concentrates, or they've used extra concentrates and had higher purchase feed costs. In both cases, they've had lower margins this year compared to the farmer that's planned and got high quality forage. Forage, in my view, is the key in terms of managing feed costs, obviously.
And interestingly, I was reading an article back in November, I think it was an Old Mill accountant's article in the Dairy Farmer, and they were talking about efficiencies. And I just wondered whether you had a take on that. What can farmers really do to work on their efficiency on farm?
Comes in a few ways. Yes, the quality forage angle will improve efficiency. It's higher quality, be more highly digested, more dry matter intake, higher yields. As I mentioned before, though, one of my big ways for efficiency is waste. A lot of farmers say we just don't have enough forage. Well, let's not waste as much. Waste can be as much as 8 to 30%, over 30% on a lot of farms is wasted. And we've got to cut out that waste to become much more efficient in what we're utilising our homegrown feeds. So I'd be looking at all aspects of the forage plan, from harvesting, ensiling, through to the feed out phases, and say, how much are we actually wasting? How much waste have we got on top of the clamp, for instance? And try and cut that waste out, because that then gives us the extra forage to feed to the cows, to reduce purchase feeds and become a much more efficient milk production unit. Other areas to improve efficiency, Steve, I've basically summarised in what Roy Slate calls his four S's of improving farm efficiency. And these quite simply are, the first S is silage, but I actually mean all forage. The second S is soil, looking after the soil. The third one is slurry and manure, and managing that in a much more efficient manner. And the final S would be sheds and the environment that cows are in. So improving efficiency in all of those areas can be achieved in most cases purely by management, planning and attention to detail at farm level, and not relying on purchase solutions, or as I call it, pallets of promise.
That's interesting. And I think it's important we drill down into actually what you mean for each of those S's. So let's just think about, what are your thoughts with respect to silage, most specifically?
Well, silage, and here I do mean all forages. This is so important to improve margins. For example, in 2021, the King's Hay costing results, the top 10% of herds ranked by milk from forage had 4,446 litres production from forage. The effect of this had a 4.36 pence per litre higher margin than the bottom 25%, who only produced 1,400 litres from forage. So that's a huge difference in potential margin from maximising forage and silage. So it's critical that we plan our forage requirements for the coming year. And actually, Steve, a useful tool I always use to help farmers do this is the AHDB feed and forage calculator sheet, which is on the web. So an excellent tool there to help farmers plan their forage. Also, at this time of year, it's essential, and I think, you know, the best farms are doing this now, is to sit down now with your contractor, your nutritionist, and your agronomist, and plan the correct quantity and quality of silage that you want for the next year. This includes your maize area as well, to complement your grass silage. And here's not just growing a crop, then harvesting it, but looking at your soil conditions at harvest and the maturity class that you need to cut at the right time. Perhaps you need carryover surplus maize silage to, you know, stabilise in the clamp before opening, so you can maximise the use of that maize in your diets. So it's the total forage package that needs planning now, grass, maize, and any other forage crops that you may be growing.
Okay, now I know before we started recording, you were talking about a meeting that you were having today. And in terms of the numbers of that contractor's clients that are having these meetings, it was a minority. Is that right?
Yes, it was only about 10% of his clients would have a meeting at this time of year and sit down around a table and say what they require, you know, when they are thinking of cutting, how many trailers they might need, the distances they'll be travelling, whether they want to ted the crop or not ted the crop, and all these things which are essential to maximising the quality of that forage and how much you're bringing in. The agronomist was there as well, and he talked about the fertiliser applications, how to utilise the slurry in the best way. And I was there, which discussed how we would feed all the foragers and the amount we'd need to feed all the different classes of stock on the farm. And it was a really good meeting, actually. And I do that on quite a number of meetings throughout my clients throughout the country.
Thank you for mentioning this feed and forage calculator that AHDB produce, which is a really important side of budgeting your inputs. How important is it to do that budget for the inputs? What's the impact to the business?
It's essential, Steve. It's measure and monitor. So it's calculate what you require and then constantly measuring and monitoring. And if you don't know that, you're basically guessing, if I'm honest with myself. And the margins are too tight to guess it now. You know, so we need to plan and manage. And that tool, HDB tool, just saves me a lot of time on spreadsheets to calculate exactly what we want, where we budget, you know, the tonnage per acre. And sometimes it fails, so we need to keep replanning and refocusing throughout the season. It's not just done now. After first cut, we'll rebalance and replan and measure and monitor and so on throughout the whole season. And it just allows you to have consistent diets of high quality forages throughout the winter feeding period for the housed herds. And also the spring calving herds, which, you know, during the winter, they need forage as well.
Absolutely. And I think when you start doing these feed budgets, you do need to know the cost of how much it is to produce these forages. And AHDB do have a forage cost calculator there as well that you can download off our website. But Roy, you've mentioned maize. We have mentioned the M word. There'll be a lot of farmers all over the country up to a certain point up in the Midlands. So from the south right up through the Midlands and maybe some northern farmers too, who are making their plan. So what do farmers really need to think about with respect to cost benefit on growing maize? Because is it worth it this year?
In my opinion, it is. For a start, mixed forages always stimulate dry matter intake, and that's the key to good milk production, is getting food into the dairy cow to be digested. Maize provides an incredibly good source of starch, which, you know, promotes good milk production and good herd fertility and health. It also provides good cellulose digestibility. Your plant, the stem itself, you know, in the past we've ignored that, and now certain breeders are looking at that in a much greater fashion, the NDF digestibility of the stem. But there's a huge but to this, Steve, and, you know, people look at maize and think it's the panacea for feeding dairy cows. But if you cannot grow good maize, then bad maize is a disaster. And so do not try. If you cannot grow good maize, do not try and grow it. But there's alternatives. Good fermented whole crop cereals, I think, are a great alternative and can be grown on most farms. And there's huge options within the cereals, the legumes, to grow what we call whole crops. And they will balance and you know, work with grass silages equally as well in lots of cases. And they'll spread the risk.
Fantastic. And actually, I was talking to Bob Marsden over this last week from Catchment Sensitive Farming. And as I understand it, there are incentives for growing some of these alternatives. So I would definitely recommend anybody in a particularly sensitive catchment, or even one that might be coming within the frame on the 1st of March, to talk to Catchment Sensitive Farming about that. So next on your list of S's, Roy, was soil. How important is soil, and how does that really translate into saving feed costs?
Well, first of all, Steve, here I have to honestly admit I'm no expert in soil, but it's obvious to me that soil is critical to sustainable agriculture and crop production. Of course it is. Good soil health will support high yields of quality forage and homegrown feeds, you know, cereals and pulses and that sort of thing. And in my opinion, is the key to the future of successful farming. And as we learn more about practices such as regenerative agricultural systems and have more environmental practices to comply with, for example, you know, using the use of legumes, forages or concentrates to fix nitrogen and reduce bag fertilizer inputs, that's going to help produce higher margins for the farmer in the total farm business and help reduce purchase fertilizers and feeds by growing that. So soil is the key, and it's something we've perhaps ignored far too long. I know it's taking a lot of news time at the moment, quite rightly so, because it's something we do need to really, really look at very closely and manage very well for the future.
Absolutely, Roy. I totally agree with you. We do have a webinar, funnily enough, that you can catch up on soil science. That's been conducted on one of our strategic farms, and I'd certainly recommend that people have a look at that. The third of your S's, Roy, was slurry. So yeah. What's the importance of slurry within saving on feed cost?
Well, here I was trying to get at two aspects of basically slurry or manure. We need to be aware of improving the efficiency of digestion within the cow itself, and specifically optimizing rumen function. So it's pointless providing all these nutrients to the cow's rumen, and then we don't have an optimal rumen function, and these nutrients come out the back end within the manure. So we want to maximize digestion of the feeds we're providing and look at reducing the nutrients in the manures. Also, one aspect, looking at reducing things like the nitrogens in the manures and the urine for, you know, maximizing that use and better for the climate as well. So that's one aspect of my slurry. It's a bit skew-whiffed, but it's looking at the rumen function. My other aspect is once that slurry is excreted out of the cow, it's maximizing that use. And here again, my experience on farms has been we've not been particularly good at it. We spread it and we measure it. We don't analyze it enough. And I know that there's standard book values, but I think at least once a year, farmers should analyze what they've got on their own farms, analyze the soil and balance the two. Match what the soil requires and your crops require to what I've got. And then you can perhaps utilize slurry in a much better way and reduce purchase bag nitrogen use, and also be perhaps better for the environment as well, which is being imposed on the farmers. So again, it's manage and measure to maximize its efficiency to get better crops, higher yielding crops, and reduce the impact on the environment.
And of course, there's kits that you can buy that can help you to test the available nitrogen, aren't there, Roy? So
yes,
It's absolutely worthwhile doing. I know I've done it with discussion groups in the past, and it's been quite eye-opening, the differences just between farms. So the last of your four S's there, Roy, is sheds. Now, not everybody will be housing cows past February, hopefully, if all goes well, it goes the same as last year. So how important really is the role of sheds?
In my opinion, in the UK, Steve, all cows are housed at some point of the year. But obviously, the higher yielding herds tend to be housed most of the year with perhaps some limited summer grazing. And the point here is I see so often these larger Holstein cows of higher genetic merit housed in older style buildings, which are designed more for the Friesian-y type cow. And it's causing issues in terms of the efficiency of that animal in its environment. You know, little things such as feed space availability, water availability, air movement within the building. These only seem little things at the time, but they're all, if they're all below the standard that the modern cow needs for optimum health and production, most of these will cause issues and reduction in yields and health and cause, you know, extra costs for the farmer. Yet they're easy fixes for positive gains, you know, putting in a new water trough or cleaning out a water trough or bedding up a cubicle with a little bit more sand or sawdust or whatever to improve lying times and improve rumination times will increase yields, rumination and cow health. And it's well documented and proven. So these are little things that farmers need to be aware of the cow's environment and the freedoms of the cow to express herself in the correct manner.
Excellent. And I think, Roy, you've been working very closely with one of our strategic farmers there, Joe Carter, down in Chippenham in Wiltshire. Yeah. And for those of you who've been fortunate enough to come to some of those meetings in the early days, you will have seen exactly the impact that Joe's seen just from his old buildings and the cow production within those. Can you comment at all on perhaps what Joe's done there?
Joe is a 250 cow farmer in Wiltshire, and to use the word typical would be probably unjustified. But what Joe has done is taken a very old fashioned council farm, and he's not knocked it down flat and built a new one. He has built a new shed as well, but he's taken these old cubicles and he's rejigged them and he's put labour into them, and he's turned, you know, an old fashioned farm into a modern farm with great environmental standards. That, you know, the lying time, the rumination time, the low stress on those cows is amazing for old buildings. And I think it's you know, an example that all farmers can look at and use and look at their buildings, look at their cows more and say, are they happy? Are they contented? And, you know, with just a bit of labour and not massive cost, you can actually correct these areas if they're wrong and make it much more suitable and the cow is much more healthier.
Definitely. And we'll be doing more meetings in the future, so anybody who can get there will make sure you get along. There's so many points there, Roy. You've given us loads of food for thought there. I think we sort of need to clarify the most important place to start. If you were going to come up with the three top starting points, where would they be?
Oh, that's a good question. The top one, as you'll gather from what I've been saying today, Steve, has got to be planning this year's grass silage campaign. Every farmer in the UK makes grass silage, and they've got to start planning it now. They should all be calculating their requirements to improve their production from forage. And that's got to be a target, in my opinion, for every farmer in the UK. Improving production from forage to reduce purchase feed costs and reduce costs, improve margins. Within the forage plan, look at the way you'll utilise your slurry to get the most from it and reduce bag fertiliser inputs. That's an immediate must, because fertiliser isn't going to get cheaper in the short term. Not at all. You look at fuel costs, they're all rising, and fertiliser is on the back of that. And the next time you walk and pick up your cows for milking and go through the cubicle shed or feed them, look around, take 20 minutes and just look around that shed and ask, you know, are all the cows lying down? Are they all ruminating or cutting away nicely? And ask yourself, if not, why not? What is stopping them doing it? Is it obstructions? Is it gates? Is it lack of this, lack of that? And you know, obviously, look at other cow signals that they're giving off, you know, the bullying activity, the water activity, the feeding activity, and just take 20 minutes out of your day and look at your cows. I think it'll be well worthwhile.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for your time today, Roy. I think we'll bring that to a close. I can see we've only just scratched the surface on this subject, but all of the tools mentioned today are available on the AHDB website, or they can be found by typing their name into any search engine. We did start to talk about maize. It's topical now as people are making plans for the coming season. And we're due to run 3 webinars covering all aspects of this in February with John Morgan from the Maize Growers Association and other friends. So do look up the recordings if you're listening to this on catch up. Further to this, I have to flag the webinar that my colleague Jamie recorded with John Roach about marginal litres. I've had tremendous feedback about this, so I can't recommend this enough. And it is the one area that perhaps we weren't able to cover in this podcast. Lastly, if you are a levy payer and a decision maker in your business, you have the opportunity to shape the future on how your levy is invested. all businesses are being strongly encouraged to register to log their thoughts, good or bad, via ahdb.org.uk/shape-the-future. Or, of course, you can type that into the search bar. Registration does close on the 31st of March 2022, so please don't miss out on that. For today, it remains for me to say thank you, Roy, for your thoughts, and thank you all at home for listening to this AHDB podcast.
Spring 2022 is your opportunity to vote to have your say about the future direction of AHDB. For more information, you can email shapethefuture@ahdb.org.uk or visit the AHDB website, ahdb.org.uk.